Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Blue LaFave, it's good to have you back on the program. It's kind of interesting. We had Sonia Nowakowski on Friday, and we geeked out over all the stuff that the DEQ does. And as I look at your, you know, job description here, Vice President of Asset Management and Business Development at Northwestern Energy, this is like you got to geek out on your job, don't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's enjoyable every time, and we get to look at a lot of new opportunities and have a lot of fun doing it.
John Schaefer, you're probably in the same way. John Schaefer is the Manager of Energy Supply Planning at Northwestern Energy. So, you know, your work is on, like, demand, evaluating energy supply, those options, ensuring reliability. There's probably a lot of opportunity to geek out on that job, too, huh?
There definitely is, and I enjoy that.
Well, that's good. I appreciate you guys coming on here. Blue, I'm going to start with you. It sounds like you guys are both well-versed on what the IRP is, obviously. Your job descriptions, show us that you lean right in on what everything the IRP tries to accomplish. Blue LaFave, what does the IRP try to accomplish?
The IRP is our communication tool to help us work through the process in identifying what our load currently is, what our supply portfolio looks like, and then look at different futures and see how our supply portfolio may change as far as reliability, as far as cost, and as far as affordability, and be able to communicate to our customers and stakeholders.
How often do you guys do this? What's the authority behind this document?
The statutes require us to do it every 3 years. We have the ability to do it on shorter time frames, but right now we're on a three-year cycle.
Is that sufficient?
It depends on the changes between IRPs. If we look at the IRP that we did, I believe it was two cycles ago, we actually went through a supplemental IRP because we had changes within the industry that required us to be able to communicate how those changes affect us. So we will stay on the three-year cycle unless there's something fairly significant that would change how we approach evaluating resources to be added to our portfolio.
John Schaefer, I'm going to ask you the same questions about the value of the IRP from your chair, Manager of Energy Supply Planning at Northwestern Energy.
Echo what Blue said, and also, you know, it's a great process. We work with an Electrical Technical Advisory Committee with a whole bunch of different groups on it, including the DEQ and PSC, and we work with customer stakeholders that are industry professionals to environmental agencies to community members. And so it's a great way to work through, you know, all these possible futures alongside, you know, different groups in your community.
Yeah. And go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. And overall, it's really a great modeling, as Blue put it, modeling exercise that really defines where we are today. And then what are all the possibilities, possible futures that we could build to, and what is that, what are the trade-offs between those futures as far as affordability, reliability, and sustainability?
Blue, let's start with taking a look at some of these changes then from the previous one, 2023, I believe it was. And then, I mean, I do appreciate the public process here. That's ongoing, so we'll talk about that as well. I looked at the working group as well. There's a lot of diverse groups collaborating. Hopefully they're collaborating on this document. What do you see is different from the previous IRP?
As we look at the overall process, we're continuing to evolve how we communicate and how we involve other people into the process. So I think this IRP does a really good job of working with those stakeholders, working with the people that want to have input into the overall process and collaborate, as you mentioned, with us. The IRP also shows the changes we had in our portfolio. in 1/1/26, that was the first time or the first day that Northwestern's portfolio was resource adequate since the deregulation back in the late 90s. So it was kind of a watermark for our overall portfolio and the reliability associated with our portfolio. And we really enjoy seeing the change and the additional resources that we have in order to protect customers both from outages and price spikes.
You know, that's really good news and historic in that you noted the first of this year as well. What does that mean to be resource adequate?
It means that we have enough resources in our portfolio to meet what we project to be the requirements to serve in accordance with utility standards. And typically the utility standard is a one-day outage in a 10-year period. So what that does is it provides a guideline for us to be able to size the amount of generation and the type of generation in order to serve the load that we have reliably to that particular standard.
John, go into what made this then resource adequate.
Yeah, there was two projects, as Blue mentioned, the additional share of Colstrip helped us as January 1st, but also the Yellowstone County Generation Station that was just put into place, added 175 megawatts to our portfolio. And those two projects made us resource adequate.
What does that mean to the public, though? Does that mean rates, and Blue, you can answer this, what does that mean rates are going to be steady? How does the public understand how that helps them turn the lights on and do it affordably?
The market is still volatile as you go through different seasons and as you see the availability of the overall market. But providing dispatchable resources like the Yellowstone Project, like Colstrip, help us cap the amount of energy that we need to buy during those times where energy is not readily available and the prices spike. So it gives us kind of a cap for those protections, but it also gives us the flexibility to take advantage. We can turn them down or shut them off when the prices are low, and it gives us overall stability associated with those long duration, long cold winter nights and very hot summer days. But gives us the ability to utilize the rest of our portfolio, our hydro, our wind, when they're maxing out and there's plenty of energy available.
Blue LeFave, again, is with us, Vice President of Asset Management and Business Development at Northwestern Energy. And John Schaefer is Manager of Energy Supply Planning at Northwestern Energy as well. So we're talking about their IRP, Integrated Resource Plan for 2026. And John, as I look at this, and Blue, I think it touches just about everything in our economy, in our lifestyle, in, our future as well. So I think it's a very, important document, an encompassing one as well. I know it's for planning, so there's not necessarily, authority. It doesn't say that we're going to start construction here or there on those things, but it's a good guideline. And I don't think I asked you earlier or got the answer. What do you see has changed between, me? And it doesn't have to be 2023. Go ahead and look back and maybe generalize, where our energy came from, what our energy needs were, and then, as the planning guy, go ahead and look even at 26 and beyond.
Starting back when we didn't have resource adequacy, so we had to rely on the market, and that market is getting tighter and tighter. There's more load in the Northwest, and there's quite a few studies out there projecting or predicting shortfalls in the upcoming years. And so, going through this process and coming to today, our customers are protected from a reliability standpoint, being resource adequate. And, we're less susceptible to, as Blue mentioned, these price spikes moving forward.
And let's talk about rates here, Blue, because that's obviously a big concern. There's data centers and large tech projects that are now, kind of on the landscape, and ratepayers are going, how, if we have, energy concerns into the future, how do we supply the energy for those new developments and still keep our rates low?
There actually is a very big benefit as we start to look at some of these large loads that have a very flat profile. they have the ability to bring in a lot of megawatt hours that help spread costs for all of customers and put pressure, downward pressure on overall rates. And as Northwestern works with them to develop the types of resources that they need to bring with them to serve, to reliably serve and maintain the service standards that we currently have, we design or help them design portfolios that identify how much firm resources do they need, how many dispatchable resources do you need, what kind of intermittent resources are allowable and storage. When you blend together a portfolio that is resource adequate but serves the needs, provides enough energy to help ensure that when they're added, we still have that reliability. But again, because they're adding load that is firm and fairly steady throughout the given year, allow us to spread some costs across a larger footprint and will help the overall customer with what's going to be upward pressure on their bills because of all the other influences that are in the market.
Yeah. John, I'm going to ask you about what the landscape looks like. You know, we have adequate energy resources now, but there's still a lot of concern going forward. What do you think is going to emerge onto the scene, or what does your planning document at least say about some of those options and how viable they could be?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things, too, when we look at adding large loads to our system is there's still that additional share of 370 megawatts of Colstrip, and that's kind of foundational. And then beyond that, you know, we do look at the amount of resources we need to continue expanding load growth, and it does require infrastructure investments. And so, you know, during our model, and as Blue said, if the costs are spread across more megawatt hours, again, these infrastructure investments too get spread across more load as well, and should be driving some downward pressure from this specific lens.
I'm curious too, Blue. You guys have had a couple of public meetings already on this, and you know, let's go back and talk a bit about the process. We've talked about those stakeholder groups that are involved in this. You know, the transparency now moves more toward the public, I guess, with these probably required stakeholder and public meetings. What are you hearing from people? Do they understand the value of the IRP?
I think as these public opportunities present themselves, people are voicing their concerns over what they perceive would be the best advantage. Understanding that, you know, both John and I kind of live and breathe in this particular environment, and we understand the requirements that we have, whether they're statutorial requirements or they're just basic physics associated with what we need to serve loads. And it's important that we understand what the public desires, understand what their perceptions are, and in some cases, you know, their input could be something that we could take a look at. But a lot of it's about just the overall education and get a better understanding of how different types of resources react and are integrated within the overall portfolio to give us really the best outcome as far as reliability and affordability.
Yeah. John, I want to get your comments, too, on where the public is and understanding our energy needs and this energy shortage. I mean, understanding it to the point of maybe fending off misinformation that comes over complex issues like this.
Yeah, I think as we engage the public, and I think Blue said it well, they have certain perceptions, and they also do see, you know, energy development happening around us. But when we come down to it, you know, it's starting to have that discussion on, we have these multi-day reliability winter events that are extremely important to keep our system safe and stable through those events. And, you know, the IRP is kind of bringing out that conversation. How do we do that? How do we do that reliably? How do we do that affordably? How do we look at all these different options as a community? And what does that mean for us moving forward? So, you know, those comments are very valid, and we're looking forward to continuing the input process, but also recognizing, you know, this is an engineering challenge, the coldest days, the multi-days, and also looking into the region, you know, they're predicting a shortage in the Pacific Northwest, and that's pretty concerning.
Yeah, and we've talked about that too at length, and you know, there's a lot of things that are promising in that regard, some new technologies, still a lot of things that look to be hampering that, and regulations play a part in that. And of course, we've talked about the power of the courts nowadays and some activism in that as well, and it creates challenges, I think, for our energy providers, and especially those trying to look out toward long term. Let's go back to this multi-day issue, Blue LeFevre. Montana has some pretty tough winters. You know, thankfully, this one's not so rough on us right now, but as the minute I say that, you know what's going to happen. Talk about how you plan for those kinds of unplanned events.
Yeah, and that's where just looking at the characteristics of what the load does during those events, then look at the characteristics of what each generation option gives us. So you look at their flexibility, you look at their duration, you look at their fuel support, you look at all of the engineering specifications with each resource, and you pair together a portfolio that would give you requirements to sustain during those outages. And we use these historic examples, some of these four-day events that we've had recently, in order to model into that to see what types of resources, what combinations of resources do we need to ensure that we can keep the lights on. And then we use that as a guide to continue to build out our portfolio as we grow to try to maintain those characteristics until we get a different input that gives us, you know, another variable in the equation that could possibly change. But really it comes down to, you know, how much firm you have, how you're able to adjust your generation, how you're able to be able to weather those long time frames with high load.
John, how long before those variables become less variable, so to speak? You know, alternate energy, I think we've seen pros and cons. You know, any source of energy probably has its unique qualities in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think things get simpler. I think there'll be more variables in the future, and you know, and I think there's a lot of new technology that we continue to watch and observe and see how that technology develops.
Going to get on to transmission here. We're with Blue LeFevre of Northwestern Energy, Vice President of Asset Management and Business Development, and also John Schaefer, Manager of Energy Supply Planning at Northwestern Energy. That's a company that serves, it's like 840,000, isn't it, in three states, Blue?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, we have a wide customer base, and our areas seem to be growing, so we're excited about continuing to serve those customers.
And I've heard you guys say that you're already about 60% renewable sources. Let me ask this question, and then we can talk about how these groups understand that value of that as well. We're talking about energy. We're talking about affordability, you know, everything really that the public has an interest in. What unites these diverse groups? I imagine there's some diverse groups in that. Well, I've seen the group, and I know it's diverse. What unites them, Blue?
I think most of them will unite around reliability and affordability. As we look out, people really understand the need to be able to turn the light on and just assume that energy is going to be there, as well as the need for that energy to be affordable so that we can attract business, so that we can continue to attract the growth to the state. So I think we're all united around those two fronts. How we get there is often how we end up debating, you know, what types of resources, what types of modeling or what types of emissions are acceptable in order to ensure that we maintain those first two requirements. That's where a lot of the discussion is around, but I think everybody's really in concert over let's keep it reliable, let's keep it affordable.
John, what pops out to you about this plan?
Well, number one is, you know, one other comment about reliability is we're a participant in RAP that's continuing to evolve, which is the Western Resource Adequacy Program. And that's a regional program. And, you know, we pool all our resources together to maintain that 0.1 day or it's 1 day in 10 years event. And, you know, as we go look at that, there's also opportunities, I think, for transmission, like the Northern Plains connector that goes from Colstrip to North Dakota. We looked at it from an energy perspective in this IRP, and it was pretty interesting to see the energy diversity or the cost of energy and how that might benefit our customers. And so, you know, I think transmission is a piece of the puzzle, as well as, you know, the other thing that jumped out is you know, how the plan is picking the firm fueled resources to really drive towards these multi-day events.
And Blue, I'm going to ask you the same question as well. You know, as a person who's been doing this for a little while, when you read that document and you go, what's that about?
for me, it's as we look at the opportunities, as we look at the existing portfolio, how much the delta or how much the scenarios look at more significant changes than what we've seen in the past. When we've done previous plans, when we look at the variations of scenarios that we go through, you know, the different cases were a little closer together because we didn't have these fairly large swings in load possibilities, because you do have these large load customers like data centers that could possibly come in, or these large swings associated with retirements of assets. You know, as we were building out the portfolio, adding the hydro, adding the different wind projects, adding the natural gas projects, adding the Colstrip, we were doing an incremental, and most of them were always, you know, a little bit beyond the horizon. They were always going to be there. And now we're starting to tip into that time frame where some of these assets are potentially scheduled to retire. You know, they're not fixed. We don't know exactly when anything will retire, but they're starting to show up in that 20-year window, and we start to see those big adjustments. And through the next planning cycles, we're going to have to start, you know, planning more and more for those type of adjustments in that plan.
And how much, and John, I'll throw this at your way, how much of this plan is actually considering the open market as well for when you have needs? Is that considering what Northwestern Energy has contracts for? What makes up the totality of that adequate resource?
It's basically all our assets in our portfolio plus any contracts we have. And those are accredited by this regional agency, and the regional agency you know, is trying to hit a certain accreditation amount, which is basically our peak load plus a planning reserve margin. And that's kind of the fundamental of how we become resource adequate. And it's made up of, you know, a whole bunch of different firm fueled and renewable and contracted resource. It's not made up of any strictly just market purchases. That's not a resource adequate metric. It's really steel in the ground to serve load for an entire region.
I want to move over to transmission a little bit too, because Northwestern Energy has invested in the North Plains Connector. What does this regional market participation look like?
I believe this regional market participation will help us, as John was alluding to earlier, help us take advantage of the differences in the generation profiles, specifically the intermittent resources, over a very large region. You know, we see these weather fronts come through over the mountains, and we see them directly affect us, but they may not be affecting those customers that are in the Midwest yet. And what we look at when we look at the historical data and the differences of how those fronts and how those weather events move through, there are time frames where we can significantly help each other. Typically, you know, early on, the West would need help, and as the front moves through, then the West would provide help for the East. And having that type of resource that would allow us to transfer energy back and forth between two load centers, I think, would be very beneficial. But we need to make sure that it's cost-effective. And that's all part of the process that we're evaluating now and trying to make sure that the amount of money needed to invest in a project like that is overall beneficial in helping protect reliability and cost.
John, let me ask you, what does that do? Better transmission. How does that affect our rates?
Well, and I think that's what Blue mentioned. We're still studying that, right? Mm-hmm. There's the energy deltas between the market, and so really it's trying to understand how is that optimizing our resources and what's the value of that optimization. And then the second thing is the reliability component that Blue mentioned. And what we're doing right now is requesting with RAP, the regional kind of program administrator, what is the reliability of that for our region, and how may that affect our, planning reserve margin, so to speak, or our accreditation of our portfolio. But, putting it back on the regional program administrator to really evaluate the reliability value. And so we're still in the process of that, trying to understand, what is that impact, and does that make a good investment?
We will get talking about public participation. We've talked a bit about it here as well. 5:30 on Tuesday in Helena, that's at the Lewis and Clark Library, and then Bozeman at Wednesday, February 4th at the Bozeman Library. That'll be at 5:30 there. Blue, what can people expect if they go to these integrated resource plan meetings in Montana?
Well, I'm going to actually turn that over to John, because John will actually conduct those meetings. But at a high level, it's a communication a tool to allow them to review the plan draft that has been filed and give Northwestern responses. But John, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think the expectation, we'll give a 20-minute overview on, what is in the IRP, kind of like what we're discussing today. How we think about things, what are we trying to really solve, and what did we learn, and some of the common outcomes. And then the main part of this is just to sit back and listen. What is the community feedback, and just listen to their concerns and take them into consideration as we go to finalize the IRP.
Yeah, this is a draft IRP as well, and that should be noted too, that those public comments can be folded into it when appropriate. Blue, let me ask you, what are some of the biggest unknowns out there facing Montana's energy future?
Yeah, as we discussed earlier, one of the biggest unknowns, and we show it in the plan, obviously, is the possible loads. As we look at data centers that are evaluating whether or not they want to participate in Montana, and understanding how much of that would come, because as we look at our overall portfolio, we have a demand of about 1,200 megawatts, an average load of, 700 to 800 megawatts, and one of these facilities could be anywhere ranging from 200 to 500 megawatts, even up to a gig, and obviously that would significantly affect our region, so that's one of the unknowns. The other unknown that's still out there as we look at the requirements that we will have on our coal generation fleet, we're starting to get some clarity out of the federal level, but it would be very helpful to understand exactly what those futures could be to help clear up some of our planning. If you look at our IRP, we ran multiple scenarios based on multiple possible outcomes driven at by the federal rules, but having clarity there would definitely help clear up some of the variations that we're seeing in the different scenarios.
A lot of people looking for clarity coming out of Washington D.C. as well. This IRP looks at 20 years into the future. And you prepare this document every 3 years. So I imagine that's quite a difficult look at times. But every 3 years, we talked about things do change. What decisions, John, in being made in this IRP are going to matter most? Maybe not in 20 years, maybe in 10 years.
As I look at it, I think number one is what Blue mentioned, is we have a lot of assets that are aging, and some of them although not finally decided, but they're nearing their book life end date. And, you know, one of the biggest things is moving forward is how are we going to manage our way through that? You know, how do we put together a reliable portfolio as we transition through some of those retirements, as well as managing some of the unknown load growth?
Well, I appreciate that as well. Just any final thoughts, Blue? I mean, I'm curious as to, you know, the final process here. Does the IRP get produced, then gets put on a shelf somewhere? I mean, how do you employ this as a valuable document for energy planning?
So from an energy planning standpoint, we'll go through the final process, the communications. The commission will then follow through with some hearings of their own in order to listen to the community. And then we will go to a final print on the document. And we will use that document as a guideline for us to, as we walk forward and prepare for the next plan, because it's kind of an automatic cycle. Once we finish one, we start moving into the next one. But it gives us a glide path as far as how are we to evaluate different opportunities. So if we end up with a very large load, we look at the plan and say, okay, how are we going to handle this particular addition, or at least give us guidance of what kind of effect it will have on our overall portfolio, how much capacity will we need, what kind of accreditation, what type of resources, what mix of resources we will need to maintain reliability. And then we'll go to the market, or we will have the load customer, if it's a large load customer, bring that type of portfolio with them in order to serve them and add it to the overall portfolio. So it's a great guideline for us, and it's a starting step, understanding things do change, and we need to reflect those changes and show how we deviated from the plan based on those particular changes.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And, you know, especially how long it takes. I was going to kind of congratulate you and John, about getting this to the draft period point. But John, you got to get to work on the next one already.
That's true. No, not quite yet, but we'll be starting off, and I think the other thing to note is there's an action plan in this IRP, right? There's, as Blue mentioned, there's always a kind of continuous involvement and evolving the methodologies and continuous improvement, and so there's an action plan that we're going to continue advancing some of this. We have AMI data now. How can we use that to help us understand forecasts and loads by customer class, as an example? So there's an action plan of items in addition to preparing for the next IRP.
And Blue, I imagine too, that there's energy is a complex issue as well. So I know that there's going to be misinformation out there about our energy future and intents and things like that. This document is something that everybody can point to and go back and say, no, we were talking about this here.
Right. It is definitely a baseline reference associated with it. And I do want to be careful, because it is a snapshot in time. Mm-hmm. It's based on the assumptions of the plan. It's based on what we knew at the time when we were making decisions. But it is our baseline, and when we deviate from that, we need to explain why. And as John mentioned, we need to evolve to whatever the new information is, and then incorporate it. And then we will describe all of that in the next plan. So it's an ongoing process. And we definitely utilize that as a baseline for us to make decisions.
And this is just like my impression right here, right now. But and maybe you can comment on it and give us some final thoughts, John, and then I'll go back to you, Blue. I still have concerns about our energy future and the math not adding up and resources perhaps being unnecessarily hindered in some areas. I was scared, but I'm less scared now after hearing this.
Yeah, I feel like we're in a really good spot where we are at today with the resources we do have. And I think we have, some time to really plan out where are we going and how are we going to get there. And, again, the IRP is a baseline to have that discussion. And we'll continue to evolve as we learn more, as we listen more. or continue listening. Again, I feel like we're in a good spot today.
I appreciate that. And I know it's energy and things change and technology, you know, saves and fails at the same time. Blue, you got any final thoughts?
I do. You know, as we look at this technology future and we have confidence, like John said, we're starting from a really good spot. But we do have some technologies in our portfolio that are a little older. In order to replace them and the characteristics they represent, we really are looking at some of these newer technologies that are coming at us, like nuclear, like long-duration storage, and really needing them to develop. Because I know one of the comments that Brian has made several times in front of many audiences is, we need to make sure the new bridge is ready before we get rid of the old bridge. We need to make sure that we do the transition in a way that we're really smart, that we don't take something out before we have its actual replacement up and working and confident in the technology and its performance.
Yeah, and we've seen that happen in other areas. Germany is one place, and it was to disastrous results. It is a very critical time for us, I think. Thank you guys for sharing that time and a little extra time here today as well. There's can talk about this like day in and day out, because I think it's one of our key issues going forward into our future. You know, are we going to have an energy adequate future? And I don't think there's any reason why we can't. So I very much appreciate the work you guys do. Blue LeFave and John Schaefer, thank you guys so much.
You betcha. Thank you very much. Appreciate being here.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.